Good evening. Let's call this meeting of the Champaign County Committee of the Whole for Justice Finance Policy to order. Today is October 11, 2011. The time is 6:03. Roll call, please.
Alex.
Here.
Ammons. Anderson.
Here.
Denzel. Berkson.
Here.
Betts. Carter.
Here.
Cowart.
Brandon.
Esri.
Here.
Holderfield.
Here.
James.
Here.
Jay. Jones. Kurtz. Langenheim. Maxwell.
Here.
McGinty.
Here.
Michaels.
Here.
Mosier. Nudo. O'Connor. I think some people are late. Petrie. Quisenberry.
Here.
Richards.
Present.
Gonzalez.
Here.
Schrader. Weibel.
Here. We have a quorum. I count 18. Is that what you have?
16.
What do you have?
16.
Okay. I have 16.
And Nudo's there. So 17.
I have 16.
You have 16. Okay. 16. All right. So 16, that means a quorum is, or a you need 9 votes to 16, yes, to pass. Just to let you know that. I got a notice from Ms. Ammons, Mr. Kurtz, Mr. Jones, Mr. Benzel, they would not be attending. I seek approval of the minutes of the Committee of the Whole for September
13, 2011. So
moved. And the County Administrative Evaluation Committee minutes for September 14, 2011. Mr. Rosales moves, or second by Mr. Esri. All in favor?
Aye.
Sorry.
Aye.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We'll move the item C, the closed session minutes, to the end of the agenda so people have time to look at them. And I know that many of you are not at the meeting, but you still have the right to look at those minutes before we approve them. I seek approval of the agenda and the addendum.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. James. Second by Mr. Richards. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Public participation. Is there any public participation? See none. Communications. I have one item. We are going to, again, near the end of the meeting, have our semi-annual review of some closed session minutes. So once again, I have 3 packets, 1 for each row. And you also should have a memo from David DeThorne on your desk with his recommendation. So I'd ask you to review these, and then at the end of the meeting, we will vote whether to open these minutes or leave them closed. Any other communications? Okay, see none. Move on to Justice and Social Services. Mr. Richards.
Good evening. This is the Justice and Social Services section of the agenda. First on the report, we have our annual presentation from Head Start. Fire away.
Rockstar. And our service delivery and child outcomes for last school year. And on our cover page, you're seeing here a volunteer who's doing a song with the children in one of our preschool classrooms. So let's see if I can make that work. All right, a letter from the Policy Council chair. The Policy Council, sorry, I see some folks squinting. This will be posted on the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission website, so you can have ready access to it there. Andre Nung is our Policy Council Chair. The Policy Council is our advisory council made up of parents and community representatives, as well as appointments from Champaign County Board and from the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission. And our chairperson is a parent in the program and has been with the program for a couple of years with children in the program. So you can read that when you can read it better when you're reading it online. So, again, Andre is our chairperson, and we have a number of parents. And Dr. Don Thomas is the U of I representative from Special Education Department. Diane Michaels here from the County Board. And Lorraine Corrett is our representative actually from the Regional Planning Commission, but is also here on the County Board. So, about Head Start, again, you can read it, but I do see new faces in the room, and just to ensure everybody knows, it is a federal grant that we receive directly from the federal level. It does not pass through the state. So Head Start, early Head Start funds come straight from the federal government to Champaign County. And operating statistics for last school year, we had a budget of $5.1 million. And that's made up of the Head Start grant, early Head Start grant. We receive about $600,000 from the Illinois State Board of Education because we wrote a grant to them that allows us to have a second teacher in most of our classrooms, and that teacher is certified in early childhood education. We receive reimbursement from the Child Care Food Program, and we also run full-day classrooms, 10 hours, so we're providing child care services to a good number of families so they can work or go to school at least 30 hours a week. And we have a small grant from the Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board that allows us to have a person who provides mental health support services to our children and families. We have 123 staff in Champaign County Head Start, early Head Start. And as you can see, the portion of the federal budget of Head Start, early Head Start expansion that we received in 2009 and continues again for the upcoming 2012-2013 grant year. And our expenditures, as you will imagine, most of our budget is spent on personnel costs, the actual salaries and wages, plus the fringe benefits and payroll taxes. We're doing pumpkins, a project on pumpkins there. Very hands-on. Curriculum is very hands-on for the children, exploring their environment, exploring the topics that they would like to know more about. All right. The total number of children in our school year that started September 1, 2010 was 781 with replacement enrollments. Our funded enrollment is 584. As you can see, in the last 4 years, we've had an increasing number of replacement enrollments, and that's not actually a good thing. We would, I think, families would benefit more if we just kept them in our program for the entire year. But families move. They make other decisions for their children. If we don't have child care and they enough child care slots, then they will move to a program where they can receive child care services if they're working or going to school. All right. We have a number of types of classrooms. We have our full day, which is 10 hours. We have our part day, which is a 3.5-hour session or morning or afternoon. School day is 6 hours. We also have home-based services for a number of families where the teacher comes to the home and does educational activities with the parent and child together. We have collaborations with child care centers and child care homes and school districts. And we also serve in early Head Start pregnant mothers. I want to go over eligibility and enrollment with a little more detail, again, for those of you not very familiar with us, families must meet, 90% of our enrollment must have income that's at poverty level or below. Families seeking full-day services do pay for child care. All Head Start and Early Head Start services are free, but if they need the 10-hour day, they are paying for child care services. But 95% of our families are eligible for the state assistance for child care, and their fee is based on their income and number in the family, so it's a sliding scale fee. At least 10% of our enrollment must be of children who have a disability. So we are identifying, we screen every child in our program and then refer children to their school district or to Child and Family Connections if it's a child younger than three for a full evaluation. Then enrollment in Head Start is not first come, first served. It's a national requirement that we serve the families who have the greatest need. So when we do our annual enrollment, for those families that are giving us a new application, their new to enrollment application, then we are identifying the factors in their family that would indicate who has the greatest need, and it is those who have the highest priority who come into the program first. We have the total number of our families in 2010-2011 was 682, 501 of those were single parents, and 181 were two-parent families. We're making pizzas here, nice messy, kind of fun for the children. We don't mind messes. We clean them up. We learn how to clean up our messes. Here's a list of the family and activities. We had a baseball game with fathers. Of course, everybody was invited. We visit Hardy's Reindeer Ranch. We have our annual heritage celebration, Read Across America, Provider Appreciation Day, year-end celebrations. You can finish the list when you look at this online. Our goal is that all children will be prepared and ready to enter kindergarten when they reach kindergarten entry age. Even from our early Head Start years, our children coming in at 6 weeks, we're always looking forward to that future of entering kindergarten. So we're going to make sure they are health ready as well as developmentally ready. And you have more detail. You have a three-page handout at your place, and 93% of the children who were kindergarten ready were deemed to have been assessed that they were ready to enter kindergarten with their skills and their physical needs. So immunizations and a physical exam. We have a partnership with the Smile Healthy program, and we have two dental clinics in our, one at Rantoul and one at Savoy. All of our children can receive dental services there as well as their immediate family members. This is a tremendous boon to the families that are enrolled in our program because it is difficult for them to locate dentists that will take Medicaid. Let's see. Last year we did have a Blue Cross Blue Shield Playground Improvement Grant that was to help increase the health and wellness in regard to the initiative to fight obesity among young children. 90% of the children left our program last year or at the end of the program year, which was actually August 31st. 90% of them were up to date for preventive health care. 99% ended the year current for their immunizations, and 94% of them received preventive health care, and 100% who needed follow-up received the follow-up care. There's me, my letter. I will point out to you that we did have a federal monitoring review in October 2010. We had one non-compliance identified. It was a technicality on how we calculated in-kind. We did receive training and, or sorry, technical assistance in regard to that. We revised and resubmitted our in-kind report and then submitted our new methodology for calculating in-kind. The OHS team, that was done by the Office of Head Start, and the Office of Head Start team, there's approximately 8 people that come for 4 days to assess our program, found no noncompliances in our services delivery or other aspects of operations. So child development and education, disability services, family community partnerships, child health and program design and management, no noncompliances in any of those services or the systems under program design and management. They also identified 2 significant strengths, again, Smile Healthy, and also our partnership with the Center for Women in Transition, where we serve families who are living there at the shelter and provide all of the services that we would provide in any of our centers. And then our annual audit, just a report on the 2010 annual audit, that there were no noncompliances identified related to the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission. So there you go. That's, I'm done. And I don't know how to turn it off, but I'll just yank all the cords and it'll be off then. So thank you very much. I can return this back. Now, do you want me to stay for my
Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Lippitt? Ms. Petrie?
Yes, I'd like to understand how the federal government decides how much money comes to this county. And then in addition to that, do we get a comparable amount as comparable counties across the United States get?
We are in the competitive range for the dollars per child. Our dollars per child for Head Start children is about $9,000 per child, and for early Head Start children, it's about $16,000 per child per year. So we're in a competitive range. We do receive a report when we submit our annual grant that shows the range throughout the nation and then within our own region and then within our state. The amount that we receive, actually, it began long ago in 1994 when the county wrote the original application for the county to be the grantee for the program, and the add-ons to that budget have come through COLAs, quality improvement dollars, and expansion dollars. We are not able, no program in Head Start can say, we need more money, so therefore we are writing a grant for $500,000 more. The federal government makes the allocation at the congressional level, and then it is divvied out over the nation and through each region. So actually at this point, we have no true control over the dollar amounts. The methodology is, we have our base grant. If there are any supplemental grants through the year that are ongoing funding, then those are added to the base grant for the subsequent year base grant. Does that help? All right. Thanks. Anything else?
Any other questions? Esther?
Yes, and that's because of the skills that we're assessing. They're much less focused on those mathematical skills that are really kindergarten entry as we approach the 3 to 5 year olds, and they're much simpler skills and easier to say that the children have met those skills when we're really talking about the 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds. Of course, our infants are not truly doing math skills, but matching, and that could be colors. That could be this shape matches this shape. Very simple concepts for the infants and up to toddlers, infants, toddlers, and two-year-olds. So that's the differences. It's just the questions are different, yeah.
Any other questions for Ms. Levin? Okay, thank you. Next item on the agenda is the monthly reports. I'll entertain a motion to receive these and place them on file.
So moved.
By Betts, seconded by Burks. And is that individually or is that omnibus? It's an omnibus motion from Betts. Does anybody have any questions on the reports, especially on the Head Start report? All in favor of receiving them and placing them on file?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. On C, we have the Champaign County Juvenile Detention Center's 2011 inspection report. There is a non-compliance, but it is an ongoing dispute that the county and the court system has with the Illinois Department of Juvenile Justice. I'll entertain a motion to receive this report, begin discussion on it.
So moved.
Moved by James, seconded by Rosales. Does anybody have any questions or concerns on this report? It's, as you can see by the date, it was issued a couple months ago. Mr. Esri.
Just clarification, there isn't really anything other than for just information that we as a board can do about this, correct? I mean, it is
correct.
At like the court level and or juvenile level.
That's correct, yeah. On a couple different levels. This is from a couple months ago, so this is one of our facilities, but not only is there not really anything we can do about this, this is my understanding is that the courts don't have any intention of stopping sending neglected and dependent minors to the system. There were four last year. They disagree that this is not allowed. They disagree with the Department of Juvenile Justice. This was not a new development this year. This is not something that the county wasn't aware that this was in the statute and was a mistake. And so this is an ongoing thing. So yes, you're correct. Are there any other questions on this report? Okay. All in favor of receiving this and placing it on file?
Aye.
All opposed? Received and placed on file. We also have offer of RPC services to Champaign County from Prairie Center Health Systems. This is something else that is not directly county related. I'll let Chair Weibel talk about this, though.
I'd move to approve the County Board's expression of support for the RCC services by the Prairie Health Center Systems, Inc.
Second.
Seconded by Quisenberry. Ms. Weibel.
I mean, the letter was written to me, but it does ask for our support, my support. Obviously, it's my support. It has to be the County Board support. That's why I brought it to Justice. We do have some representatives from the Prairie Center Health Systems who could tell us a little bit more about this program.
That would be great.
Good evening. My name is Bruce Guardini. I'm the CEO of Prairie Center Health System in Champaign-Urbana. And I have with me Marla Spilo, who is our clinical director. And every 5 years, we're required to submit an application to the Bureau of Prison for what we call a halfway house. Prairie Center has operated this for approximately 20 years. This grant basically is not funded through the county or the state level. It comes from the Bureau of Prisons. It's roughly about $450,000. We have roughly an average of about 15 inmates that stay with us at our Hill Street facility. So I'll let Marlis talk a little bit about the program.
Thanks, Bruce. As Bruce indicated, we're applying for a five-year RFP to the Federal Bureau of Prisons and what we call this halfway house or residential reentry center. The purpose of the reentry center is to help those inmates that are returning to the community have a place to stay, find employment, find adequate housing. We refer them to mental health or substance abuse treatment services. I have about 3.5 staff that work for me, two with our certified alcohol and drug counselors. One has a degree in corrections background, and one is our checker. As Bruce mentioned, we are a small use facility, which means we generally have 15 inmates or under. We work very closely with our community. We have a community review board that meets on a quarterly basis and includes such members as the assistant Champaign, City of Champaign Police Department, Assistant Chief Murphy, representative from mental health, a couple local, just local folks, neighbors, if you will, that are interested in our program, representative, a deacon from the Episcopal Church, just a couple other folks that are interested in the program. Basically, an inmate stays at our facility anywhere from 3 to 6 months. We have about a 95% success rate, a very small recidivism rate. In other words, where they have to come back either to the halfway house or they're having problems on probation, because they do go on U.S. probation after they've completed the requirements for the halfway house. With respect to public safety, the number one thing that we have to attend to and willingly attend to is accountability for our inmates. We know where they are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And, we just, like Bruce said, we've run it for 20 years, and we just feel it's a very necessary and good program for the community. Helps with community safety, actually. Thank you.
Any questions? Mr. Betts.
This is a proposal that's being submitted to the Bureau of Prisons. Are there other folks that are submitting proposals?
Well, actually, it hasn't been submitted yet. It's due the 28th of October. We really don't know if there are any other entities submitting a grant. That's not something that they tell us, that the Bureau tells us. But one of the things, or a couple things that we, that is to our favor, is that we currently have a renewed contract, 3-year contract with the U.S. Probation Office, a drug and treatment program renewal with the Bureau of Prisons, because they identify probably about half of the inmates who need to stay 6 months and get that additional alcohol and drug treatment that they need. So.
We have a follow-up. The inmates that we're talking about, were they inmates generated locally into the federal system, or is it a random?
The RFP covers Champaign, Ford, Iroquois, Vermilion, and McLean counties.
What I'm saying is the offenders themselves arose out of that district.
Yes, they did. Okay. Yes.
Any other questions? Okay. We have a motion. Mr. Betts.
Not a question as much as a discussion. I think it's a very, very worthy program. My concern is if there's someone else applying for this same grant, we don't know about it. We're trying to suggest that this is the one that the board favors, and we have no idea what the other proposal might be.
If I could just go ahead. This is a competitive grant of which I don't think the board has to take a position who they favor one over the other. It's just that we have to inform you that we are doing this, and if anybody else was making a proposal, I'm assuming they would be here tonight as well.
We have not received a request to support any other people from anybody else who's applied for it. So as far as I know, Prairie Center is the only organization in this area was applied for.
Any other questions or discussion? Okay. Ms. Petrie.
Just a clarification question then. If another entity came forward and asked for our support, does that preclude our doing so?
No.
I think we can support anybody we want to.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think if someone else, if another service provider came forward that we felt would do an acceptable job, part of this is asking for the approval of several levels of government in the area, and I don't think us doing this precludes us from doing the same from anybody else. We're not evaluating the grant ourselves. That's going to be the Bureau of Prisons. Okay. Anything else on this, Mr. Weibel? Any other discussion on this item? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? The letter passes.
Thank you.
Okay. Don't believe we have anything for consent from Justice. The chair has no report. And so, thank you. That's it from Justice.
Next up, Mr. McGinty for Finance.
Okay, good evening. First up, let's take care of Dan, the treasurer. We've got three items. Dan, I think we can omnibus all three before your monthly report, if you don't mind.
That'd be great. Let me explain what is on page 25, 26, and 27. These are all three mobile homes that went to a tax sale back in 2008. No tax buyer purchased those, so the trustee, in the name of the county, takes possession, and they wait 2.5 years to see if anybody will redeem. That's not occurred, so then the county has the ability then to deed that over to somebody that would bid on and take that these mobile homes and put them back on the tax rolls, which is a good thing. So we have three of these things tonight, as you see, so I just ask that we agree to move them forward.
Is there a motion to do so? By Lorraine, seconded by Geraldo. Any discussion on it? Questions for Dan? Quiz?
Are you omnibusing?
Omnibusing. I'm sorry. Was that motion in an omnibus fashion? Is that all right, Lorraine?
Yes.
For all three? Good. Thank you. And the seconder, that's good. Good with the seconder. All right. Good. Thank you. Patsy, question.
Yes. Just an information question. Is it unusual to have this number, or is this a regular pattern? Just give me some perspective on that.
I meant to say that. I'm sorry. This isn't unusual at all. I'll give you an example. The last year at our tax sale, we had 109 mobile homes that went to the tax sale. Of those, only 9 were purchased by tax buyers. So that puts 100 in the category that we're talking about right here. So 2.5 years down the line, we could be here on a bus, hopefully, to take care of all 100. It's not likely, but it's not unusual to have this kind of number.
Yeah. Other questions for Dan on this issue? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries.
In my monthly report, starts on page 28, and just a little bit about real estate. We're a little over 98% collected at this point. This is the last month for collections. The last day will be October 27th with the tax sale on October 28th in this room at 9 a.m. And we'll expect at that time probably around 1,000 parcels out of the 75,000 that we originally sent out back in May. Also in my report on page 41, the last page, is a little report that you can see that we've paid off the tax anticipation notes for the nursing home. This is the third year that they've had tax anticipation notes, which means they go out and borrow from a bank through a bid process for the tax anticipation that they will receive during the collection season. So we've paid that off on September 21st. As you can see, we paid about $6,000 in interest over the $856,000 they originally borrowed. So unless there are questions, I'd ask that my report be accepted and placed on file, please.
So moved.
Motion to do so by Stan, seconded by Tom. Any questions for Dan before we vote? All in favor say aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Next up, amendments and transfers. We have a few amendments. The first one, number 50 for $120,000 out of tort immunity, for $120,000 for payment of the work comp for fiscal 2011 payroll premiums. Is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
By Stan, seconded by Jan. Discussion. Michael.
I assume the answer is fairly simple, but I just wanted to ask why this is going up. Is it going up because we had more workers' comp to pay than we thought we were going to?
Our work comp rate increase was not received for this fiscal year until into the first quarter. I believe it was the end of January. It went up 19%. We, at that time, decided to wait until the end of the fiscal year to actually do the budget amendment when we would have a much better certainty of how much we would actually need based on payroll throughout the year. This is for the entire general corporate fund.
Other questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion carries. Item 2, an amendment number 51. It's revenue positive by $6,000 to cover additional RHSP remittance for recordings exceeding the expected level out of the recorder's office. Is there a motion for approval? By Stephanie, seconded by Michael. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Item 3, an amendment, number 52, for $3,900 out of the auditor's office. Let's do 3 and 4 omnibus, if that's all right, because they're both $3,900. They're both related to the stipend, one for the auditor, one for the coroner, number 52 and 53, $3,900. Is there a motion for approval? By Gary. Is there seconded by Tom? Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion carries. Now, on to the addendum. Item number 5, $500 out of animal control. It's amendment number 54 to appropriate money for spay-neuter program. Is there a motion for approval? By Jan, seconded by Aaron. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion carries. Item number 6. Amendment number 55 out of the recorder for $1,000 to cover overtime costs as revenue neutral. Is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
By Lloyd, seconded by Stan. Discussion. Stan.
Was there a special event or something that the overtime came in, or is that just normal workday hours?
They've done a complete upgrade of their technology system, and that and incurred some overtime costs in association with getting that done.
Other questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Item number 7, an amendment, number 56. It's revenue positive by a few hundred dollars there for early voting assistance state reimbursement out of the county clerk's office. Is there a motion for approval? By Diane, seconded by Gary. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Out of the Labor Subcommittee, request for approval of the agreement for Joint Labor Management Health Insurance Committee for Champaign County. Is there a motion for approval by Stephanie? Is there a second?
Second.
By Gary. Discussion? Explained in the packet. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Next up, County Administrator's Report, Deb.
The General Corporate Fund Fiscal 2011 Revenue Projection, Revenue Expenditure Projection Report is at your desks this evening. It has not changed substantially from the last couple of months. Revenues are still projected to be above what is budgeted, not quite as much ahead as what had been reported last month, but still coming in at 101% of the budget, for a total $241,183 over budget. Where we lost a little ground this month was in local government reimbursement and general government, which is basically fees. Everything else, the sales taxes continue to perform better than last year and ahead of our budget. The expenditures, again, the general corporate fund departments are doing an awfully good job of managing personnel costs, because it looks like in all areas we will underspend by at least 2%. which is the substantial savings that is projected on the general corporate 2011 expenditure budget at this point in time. There are some other areas of savings and a couple where we expect to spend more. But overall, we expect to underspend by 2% or $626,550. So the projection right now for the end of the fiscal year in terms of the fund balance is that we will end at 11.85% fund balance. If we subtract the outstanding loan to the nursing home, it's at 10.8% fund balance for fiscal, the end of fiscal 2011. And then the budget change report is on the last page and just shows all the changes that have occurred to the budget since it was originally adopted. I would point out to you that this is an extremely different looking budget change report than ones we saw 3-4 years ago, which by this time were typically at least 2 pages long, which is an indication of the fact that your departments are managing their budgets within the appropriations that you've approved for them, and it's also, I think, a good reflection on the fact that the county board is not approving unnecessary budget amendments.
Is there a motion to accept and place these on file by Stan, seconded by Geraldo? Questions for Deb on any of those reports? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Next up, the recommendation for the fiscal 12 budget appropriation.
The next item is reflected in a memo on page 55 of your agenda this evening. If you will recall, there was a request presented by the Circuit Court with regard to the fiscal 2012 budget for the replacement of the court sound system, which is failing in many of the courtrooms and has become problematic. And in addition to that, over the last 2 months, we've come to realize that the video arraignment system is also on its last legs and basically in a position where it's going to need to be replaced or we're not going to be able to keep it up and running in the near future. The general corporate fund budget, as you recall, for fiscal 2012, we did not include any of the new requests in the budget. Because the general corporate 2012 revenue doesn't allow for adding any more expenditure to that budget. However, this points out to you that we still have the court's construction fund. The court's construction fund has right at $1 million left in it. This has been, since the project was completed, anticipated that it would be used to prepay bonds or to offset bond payments made by public safety sales tax funds in the future. $300,000 of this money is money that is from bond proceeds, which were for original project expenses. $700,000 of this money is donated funds for the Clock and Bell Tower project from the Citizens Committee, which raised $1.1 million, and needs to be reserved for prepayment of bonds and or offsetting the burden on public safety for those bond payments, because we issued $1.1 million in bonds to be prepaid by those citizen donations. We still have outstanding $400,000 of those donations that will come in at some point in the future. So seeing that General Corporate is unable to, most likely unable to deal with these projects that are facility related for the courts and the court's operation, I am presenting to you tonight the concept of including $100,000 in appropriation to replace the courthouse sound system and the court's video arraignment system in 2012 with part of the $300,000 that remains in the court's construction fund. And the budget that you're going to see in a little bit includes that, but it will be taken out. If you approve this, it's in there. If you don't approve it, it will be taken out.
Tom.
I'd like to move adoption of the recommendation that is before us regarding the use of the court's construction fund for purposes that are outlined in the memorandum.
Motion has been made. Is there a second by Lorraine? Discussion on the motion. Tom, and then Stan, and then Diane.
I want to speak to the motion briefly. Before we, Ralph and I were at the jail doing a jail tour, before we got here, and we were talking about actually the arraignment process and the facility that exists there for purposes of doing it. on a daily basis, I am in court and I'm very familiar with video arraignment. Most of the time, it seems to work. It definitely doesn't work all of the time. This is definitely a system that is outmoded. No technological system of this nature is going to last forever. I'm kind of surprised that some of the stuff has lasted as long as it has. We all know that computers and things like that are obsolete very, very quickly. I wish that weren't the case, that things would last a lot longer. But the technology changes, the system changes. I would hope that whatever system that is purchased and installed carries some longer life expectancy and adaptability, that it doesn't just run out of its ability to be updated so quickly. But I'm not optimistic that that's the nature of things in terms of licensing agreements and things of that nature. I know that all it takes is one system breaking down that is recording a trial, for instance, and you don't necessarily know it has broken down. And suddenly, you've got missing sections, and you've got an appeal, and you've got potentially a whole new trial if that happens. Hopefully it never happens, but I do know that there are, just being in this courtroom, there are definitely problems with the systems. And I don't personally have the knowledge and ability to cure them or diagnose them, but I know there's a problem. And I just think 10 years, we've got a lot of life out of this system, quite frankly.
Stan and Diane.
Well, following up on Tom's, I guess when I was looking at this, 10 years in my mind, of course, that's a 24-hour operation for most part, but I would hope that when we look at this that there's been some thought given as to where the problems might be. I know we always hear we need something, but I had questions as to, well, has anybody really researched it to see if it's the wiring, the lighting, or other things that are affecting it? The video system, you're right, Tom, digital has really come a long way and improved, but I'm a firm believer just because you buy new, like I do new cars, doesn't always mean you're getting something better. I just would hope that when we go out for RFPs, and I'm sure we will, that we look at that and that we have someone go in there and really look at the issue instead of saying, here's the newest and the best, because I've heard comments before about the acoustics in the room. Just like in this room, there's times when certain people speak, it's very, very hard to hear them because their voice just doesn't carry like some of ours. But with that said, 10 years to me, again, I know my telephone system at home, and of course I don't use it much because nobody calls me, but my wiring's been there ever since I've lived there for 30 years, and it seems to work fine when I use it, and some of it's just everyday maintenance. So I hope we really look at the whole thing instead of just saying we need new.
Diane.
I guess my question's a little more general, having to do with the funding and moving the money. I do agree the project probably is a priority for us, but the $400,000 that's outstanding, do you have a time frame, or did you give any of those people a time frame of when that needed to be paid back, or do you feel like we will get most of that?
I believe we will get it all, but it's part of an estate.
Okay. I understand that completely.
Stephanie?
I do believe that we do need a new system. I agree wholeheartedly. I would like to see, however, in this plan, a maintenance portion to the upgrade, understanding that with the technology as it continually evolves, when you're using this type of equipment on a daily basis, there's a lot of normal wear and tear that happens. And so I would hope that there would be some type of a maintenance agreement with the company that we will decide upon as part of the whole project, so that that will be included, so that maybe will last a little longer than 10 years.
Chris?
Just to maybe contribute a little bit to this, Mr. Quisenberry and I actually met with Roger Holland before the meeting tonight and had a chance to take a look at these systems. I was initially skeptical about some of the claims of how, you know, bad the systems were. After looking at it, I think, you know, James and I have talked about this, there may be a few of the minor issues that could be addressed without replacement, but it was my impression that the system was poorly installed to begin with. There was probably limited oversight, if any, of the contractors who did the work. To the extent that things are not labeled, there's very little documentation available, and things that you'd sort of expect would go without saying that would be provided by a contractor installing this type of a system appear not to have been done. So I'm not sure if the system that we have is worth investing a significant amount of new money into, and I think I'd be supportive of replacement. I would say, though, that we don't want to see this happen again, and I would certainly, you know, volunteer my some of my oversight in terms of looking at the RFP and talking to contractors, because I think there's just a basic level of quality and diligence that we can expect from a contractor installing this type of system, and it doesn't appear like we insisted on that the last time around.
Other comments or questions at this point, Quiz?
Yeah, let me add my voice to Mr. Alex. Looking at this system, I don't think you can't just look at it as if it's a 10-year-old system that needs to be replaced. It's my opinion that it was designed a few years before it was installed, and then in the construction project, it was probably installed towards the end of the construction project. So we're talking about technology that's more like 15 years old. Perhaps much of the wiring would be reusable, but we're replacing it will get us quite a bit in terms of advancing the technology. I would hope that when we proceed, I'll second Mr. Alex's request that it have better oversight this time. I would hope that when we proceed, we take into account, particularly with the video conferencing system for arraignment, the potential of more inmates being housed at the satellite facility or a future developed facility, so that we don't lock ourselves into having to do something different if the need for video arraignments, remote arraignments, gets greater over time because of our changing facility needs and maybe changing facility locations. One other thing I will add is the video conferencing technology that we're using. I think it's safe to say that what we bought for what we're using right now is not necessarily the best we could get. It was what we could get to do the job. I would encourage us to actually buy new equipment, proceed with the design that is both current in its technology and maybe looks a little bit to the future, so that we're not looking at this in another 10 years.
Anything else? Patsy.
Yes, I have some clarification questions on the $300,000. If the board this evening approves this $100,000, that's leaving $200,000. Can you explain to us exactly how that money can be spent?
Well, it can be spent to prepay bonds or to offset bond payments being made from the public safety sales tax fund. It can be spent on any other project that is related to the court's facility.
Okay, so it is basically dedicated monies to the court?
Yes.
All right. Thank you for that clarification. At this juncture, I can't support this, but however, I do want to state my caveat and my continuing support, depending on how the RFP gets written and the proposals that get submitted, because I support the previous comments that I've had great concerns that this is coming up within 10 years, and I would like to see us do a much better job so this doesn't come up in 10 years for another board.
Anything else? Quiz? Anybody else for round one? All right, Quiz.
I will say that I hope this board is willing to take another look at this, because I'm a little skeptical that what needs to be done can be done for this $100,000 amount that's listed here. So we may have to revisit this once we get some proposals.
Anything else? I will add, my day job's in AV and IT, that combination. During that time, we've done some pretty big projects that were multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars that were along this scale. The one thing that you can save on these days is the cost of video conferencing, and doing that in an HD digital fashion has come down quite a bit. But there's still a lot of expense because gear costs a lot. And so, you know, let's get some RFPs in. Let's have some people take a good look at it and see what we can do. That would be my opinion on it. Anything else before we vote? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Next up is our budget presentation. I will.
Each of you received with your board packets a budget in brief document, which synopsizes this document that's right here. And this presentation is to highlight what is in your budget in brief document. So the Champaign County fiscal year 2012 budget. The total budget for the entire county is $110,999,158 in revenue and $113,312,685 in expenditure. And for the general corporate fund fiscal 2012 budget, revenue is at $31,551,692 and expenditure at $31,660,183. The economic environment at this time. Nationally, the National Association of Business Economists has downgraded its forecast for growth. It was previously going to be 2.3% in 2011, and it's now 1.7%, with an anticipated growth of 2.3% in 2012. At the state level, from my perspective, there's continuing uncertainty regarding the state budget, which places at risk some of the state shared revenues which are received by the county. Right now, the one that is probably particularly most at risk is the personal property replacement tax, as the governor has recommended, and the legislature will be considering, for example, funding superintendents of regional offices of education from the local share of the personal property replacement tax instead of the state share, which would be money coming out of our budget. Additionally, with regard to probation officers and officers at the juvenile detention center, the state is similarly, the state pays a substantial portion of those salaries through salary reimbursement to the counties at this point in time, and are also there looking at using the local share of the personal property replacement tax. So there's still uncertainty with regard to the state and our funding. Locally, in 2011, Champaign County has actually experienced growth in our sales taxes at an average of 3% over what was received in 2010. Our income taxes are at an average down 3%. However, we'll actually receive more this year because we're actually going to receive 12 months of revenue from the state this year, whereas the last 2 years we've only received 10 months of revenue. But when you compare month to month from prior year to this year, the actual revenue is down in income tax. Our unemployment rate in Champaign County in August stands at 8.9%, which is slightly below the national unemployment rate of 9.1 and is, you know, somewhat better than the state unemployment rate of 9.9%. And our property values continue to maintain pretty good stability with projected growth of 1% in 2011, which impacts our 2012 revenues. This is a look at revenue from the 2011 projected to the 2012 budget, and you can see that these are broken down by types of funds or fund sources. General Corporate Fund is looking to see about $300,000 in growth in all. The total projected growth in revenue is 1.76% or $1.9 million. Similarly with expenditure, and as you look at these in your budget in brief document, you can kind of see which funds are seeing growth in revenue and expenditure. RPC is always going to show a higher percentage of growth from the projected to the budgeted because they are required to budget
over budget because of their funding sources and the way their revenues are received. So overall, from the what we expect to spend in 11 to the budget for 12, it's a 4.8% increase or $5.19 million. For general corporate, it's a 2.7% increase or $840,000. There are four areas of concern with the 2012 budget that is being presented to you this evening. The first area is tort immunity, which you have heard us talk about in the past. Tort immunity is the fund where we collect through a property tax the revenues to pay for the general corporate's share of workers' compensation claims and insurance, and property liability claims and insurance. And because this is a property tax fund subject to tax caps, the growth in the revenue has not kept pace with the increases in expenditure. And so you can see the result is that since 2008, the fund balance each year goes into a more and more negative position. We are able to survive this because our self-funded insurance fund is healthy at this point in time. And even though we are projecting to end 2012 with a $1.2 million deficit in the tort immunity fund, we're projecting to end 2012 with a $2.7 million surplus or excess in the self-funded insurance fund, and the fund balance goal for that fund is at least $1 million, so we're still at goal when the two funds are combined. But at some point, we're going to have to find a solution for this issue. Another area of concern is capital replacement funding. Since 2008, we have not been replacing for future reserves. This is the fund where we set aside monies to replace all of our technology, vehicles other than the sheriff's office vehicles, other capital project needs of the general corporate fund departments. We have only been budgeting for what has to be purchased in the next fiscal year, and in fiscal 2013, we're going to hit the first year where there is no reserve for anything that has to be replaced. Whereas for these first 4 years, there was reserve that had been set aside in previous years for the replacements. So this will become a greater problem until we're able to get back on track with funding our capital needs as is required to maintain the goal when you fund for future reserves is that this becomes a very even dollar amount. And we had experienced that from 2003 to 2008. Where there weren't big spikes because we were taking care of making sure that everything would be replaced, you know, in a timely manner. So this is another area of concern is the eventual replacement of appropriate capital funding. Another area is information technology. We have two major business systems programs, the real estate tax cycle system and the accounting system, which were both written in-house programs over 30 years ago, in RPG programming language, which is housed on the AS400. Now, most of the users of these systems will tell you they work fine, and they do. They're workhorses. They get the job done. But the problem is, it was noted by our outside auditor this year that we have one in-house programmer who does this programming language. If a bus hits him tomorrow, we have a big problem. And so we had told you we were going to try to fill a second programmer vacancy we had with another programmer with this skill set. Where we are getting 200 applicants for some jobs in the county, we had four applicants for this job, and really none of them were exactly what we were looking for. That's because RPG programming is not a highly taught program language anymore, and there is a diminishing population of programmers who have this skill set because it is a diminishing use. So we believe that within the next 5 to 10 years, the county is going to have to replace both of those rather robust systems, and how we replace them and timing that replacement to ensure that we can sustain our operations is going to be a challenge in the next few years. The final area of concern is the nursing home. The nursing home is going to see a 17% decrease in the Medicare reimbursement rate in fiscal 2012. In August, the nursing homes across the state were told by the state that they were going to see a slowdown in their Medicaid reimbursements. for up to 120-day delays before we would see our Medicaid reimbursements, and this is to an operation which is already cash-strapped, and at the end of the third quarter is passing the $2 million mark in accounts payable that are outstanding. So when you see on the auditor's report that we're paying things out of the wrong fiscal year, that's part of that is a function of the fact that the nursing home does not have the cash it needs to keep its accounts payable current. So obviously this is a serious area of concern and a challenge. Our MPA is working hard with different groups to try and, you know, lobby. AFSCME has been one of the groups that has provided some support to lobby the state to speed up those Medicaid payments instead of holding them. That is a priority, and we'll see what happens. The general corporate fund in 2012 was the first time that in 3 years that the department heads and officials of that fund were not being asked to cut their budgets. So we did ask to get sort of a baseline read for those departments to let us know if there were operational needs or requirements they had that would require additions to their budgets. And this is the listing of those programs. You are taking care of one of them tonight, the circuit court's request for the sound system. We found a different way to resolve that issue. The total of all the requests was $1.1 million, but over half of that was with one request, which was for the Brookins generator. Basically, what you all decided at the September Finance Committee of the whole meeting is that it doesn't look like in fiscal 2012 that we have ongoing operating revenues to support ongoing operating requests in 2012, but that at the end of the first quarter in February 2012 that you will re-review that list of projects and give consideration to one-time expenditure projects that could possibly be funded if the general corporate fund balance at the end of 2011 exceeds 10%, if we are continuing to receive revenues based on our projections, that you might make a determination at that time to fund some or part of those program requests that were presented to you. This is just a look at the total change in budget for the total Champaign County budget from the original 2011 budget to the 2012 budget. This is different than looking at it from the projected. This is the original budget. And you'll see that in revenue, the projection is actually down 1.58%, down $1.79 million. And that is almost completely and directly attributable to the interfund revenue, which is where we received $2.2 million for the Art Bartel construction project in fiscal 2011. So there's really very little fluctuation or change in the revenues for the total county budget going from the what we expected in 2011 and what we're budgeting for 2012. This is a look at the total revenues for the county, and you'll see that there are four primary revenue sources which comprise about 85% of the revenues for all the county's operation: property taxes, sales and income taxes, grants, and fees and fines. For the general corporate fund, there are really three primary revenue sources. Again, property taxes, the sales and income taxes or state shared revenues, and fees. This is a similar look to the expenditure change from the original budget in 2011 to 2012. And again, it's down $2.5 million. And you'll see there that the most significant change is in capital, which is where we budgeted the $2 million, you know, Art Bartel construction project. So, again, our revenues and our expenditures are staying fairly consistent, not much growth, staying fairly consistent with where they were a year ago. In the expenditures by classification for the total county budget, 53% is in personnel and 31% is in services, which comprises the majority of the budget. For the general corporate fund, it's even bigger. 72% of our expenses are in personnel, 20% are in services, for a total of 92% of the budget, leaving, you know, very little for commodities, capital, debt, and transfers. This is just a look at the total budget with the combined fund balances that the county has in all of its funds. So you can see that revenues and expenditures are staying very close,
to each other. This is on 2011. It's based on what is projected to be received and spent. And we maintain our overall fund balances fairly consistently. The balanced budget, your definition of a balanced budget is that the county will make all current expenditures with current revenues, avoiding procedures that balance current budgets by postponing needed expenditures, realizing future revenues early, or rolling over short-term debt. A budget ordinance is balanced when the sum of the estimated net revenues and appropriated fund balances is equal to appropriations. So your total budget has a negative variance of $2.3 million for fiscal 2012. $1.3 million of that negative variance is budgeted in the RPC funds. And again, the RPC funds have a practice of over-budgeting, which is a requirement to accommodate the fact that they deal with several overlapping grant years, non-recognition of prior year revenue in the year in which it's spent, again, partly because of the overlapping grant years, variations in staffing changes and expense-only accounts for fringe benefits and administration. The other $1 million of that negative variance is spent within funds reserved in previous fiscal years for 2012, capital and other expenses. So it is the $2.3 million variance either will not be spent, a lot of it will not be spent by RPC, or in the other areas of the budget where we may spend more, it is in funds where we have reserved. For example, in highway, we reserve funds for a couple years knowing that a particular road project is going to occur in a certain year. When we look at the general corporate fund, the negative variance is $108,491. $103,600 of that negative variance is in the county clerk's fiscal 2012 budget to accommodate for the decennial redistricting costs and the presidential election expenses. And that $103,600 will be non-recurring in the fiscal year 2013 county clerk budget. So it's being treated as a one-time expenditure, which you are paying for out of the general corporate fund balance when you approve the fiscal year 2012 budget. And then the entire budget, which this entire document, is posted on the county board's website. And if you go to the county board homepage and click on county budget, you come to this site. Click on the 2012 tentative, and every single document within the budget document is posted here, so you can bring up any budget that you want to look at or any particular individual document that you want to look at. There are many of them, but if you want to see detail of any of the budget that you don't have in your budget and brief document, please go to the website and review it there.
And there will be an exam next week on all of the documents. At this point, I think that what I'd like to do is get a motion on the floor to accept and place this on file and then discuss it. Motion by Pius, seconded by Geraldo. So discussion and questions for Deb regarding this presentation. Budget brief was a document that we created, what, 3 or 4 years ago, maybe?
3 years
ago. Pretty handy piece of information there. All of this is available on the web. Questions? Overwhelmed, dazed looks. Now, we've been discussing this for quite a few months, pieces at a time. Diane.
I just have a question when it comes to regard to the nursing home and our budget. I just have a gut feeling that that's going to bite into some of the things that that we wanted to get done this next year, and I don't know where we're going to get that money from.
Well, I know that MPA is hopeful that the state will come through with continuing to pay at least county nursing homes their Medicaid reimbursements in a more timely fashion, and that is up in the air right now. If the intergovernmental transfer is completed and that money is passed through to the nursing homes again, as is anticipated, it could almost clear up the backlog of outstanding AP, but it is a very tenuous situation. And there is, you know, cash is the issue and the problem. Now, the nursing home will issue tax anticipation warrants in November. I'm sure as soon as you approve the budget levy and appropriation ordinance, the next ordinance for you to approve will be the tax anticipation warrants so that the nursing home can, again, issue those and receive that revenue in December.
Other questions? Gary.
Where do the funds come from that can be transferred into the capital?
Could you speak up a little bit? I'm sorry.
Yes. Where do the funds come from that can be transferred into the capital replacement?
The two primary sources of funding for the capital asset replacement fund are the general corporate fund and the public safety sales tax fund. Basically, technology for the court system users comes from the public safety sales tax fund. All the rest of it primarily comes from the general corporate fund. Sometimes there will be a special revenue fund. Probation service fees fund has periodically contributed to the capital asset replacement fund, but those are the primary funds that would contribute.
Other questions? Okay, so one thing I can recommend certainly is with all the documents there, any questions that you might have, email and or contact Deb as we head toward time to vote on the budget in November. Anything else for now? All those in favor of the motion to accept in place, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Thank you very much. Tony did distribute the purchase is not following purchasing policy, and there's a monthly report from September of 2011 in the packet. Is there a motion to accept in place or any questions for him at this point? Motion by Stan to accept in place, seconded by Lorraine. Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
That motion carries. Under other business, there's a request for approval of Illinois State Board of Elections Grant Acceptance Agreement. That's on page 5 to 16 of your addendum. Is there a motion for approval? By Stephanie. Is there a second? By Quiz. Discussion. Quiz.
Could we have Gordy tell us a little bit about this grant?
This is the State Board of Elections Voting Access for Individuals with Disabilities grants. It's awarded to election jurisdictions based on voting age population. Champaign County's award is a little more than $15,000, and we can use this to make improvements to voting locations to improve accessibility or for equipment that can allow us to improve accessibility for voters with disabilities.
Anything else? Patsy.
Again, just a question of information. Is that an average that counties get? Do we get more or less than like-kind counties?
I don't know. Our award is based on our voting age population, so I imagine the State Board of Elections has a formula that gives us X number of dollars per persons we have in the county over the age of 18, over the age of 17.
Other questions? Thanks, Gordy.
Thank you.
Was there a motion? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion carries. Is there any other business? There's no chair's report. For consent, all of the items from A, B, C, and that one that we just did on F, and I believe that that's it from finance. Thank you.
I think we'll get the next up is policy personnel appointments, and Mr. Quisenberry will be chairing this session. All right. Good evening. First up, we have an appointment to the Willow Branch Drainage District, and I will ask our chair to inform us of his choice for nomination.
As you know, after conferring with the state's attorney, Mr. Gertes does not have a conflict of interest. Therefore, I withdraw my nomination of McMahon, which I did a month ago, and I therefore nominate Mr. Jed Gertes for the Willow Branch Drainage District from September 1, 2011 to August 31st, 2014.
All right. Do we have a second? Jan? All right. Any discussion on this nomination? Tom?
I guess there was more to the question of whether he had a conflict. There was also the question of whether the person who you originally nominated didn't I suppose, technically live in the district, whether or not he was eligible. Was that resolved?
Okay, Pius?
We could nominate Mr. McMahon if, let me state the, in certain instances, you can nominate people who do not live within the district. It says the appointing authority in other districts finds it to be in the best interest of the district that the requirement of ownership of land in the district be waived. So if we feel it's in the best interest of the district, we can nominate somebody else.
Can I have a follow-up?
Sure. Sure, Tom.
On Mr. Gerdes, the state's attorney apparently determined that there wasn't a conflict. Has he waived his claim of damages against the district that he's going to be serving on?
Pius, do you have any idea?
I'm not aware that he has or that he has not.
Okay, any further discussion? Patsy?
Well, I think Mr. Betts reminded us all of the major issues in connection with that. So I have two information questions for Mr. Weibel. First of all, if this appointment is not made this evening, so there's more of a window of time to see if there are other applicants which would remove some of these conflicts, is there a deadline by which this appointment needs to be approved by the board?
Just a second here. I don't think there's a timeline, but I will point out that there's about about six or seven or eight people who live in the drainage district. It's a very small drainage district. So I think the question is, I don't think there are other people eligible. I mean, some of these older, like in some cases, like here's an owner, it's Midway Investment Holdings. It's a group of people. It's not a single individual. There's a trust out there. So obviously, there aren't very many people available. It's a very small population. It's, probably 3 square miles, something like that, or less.
Thank you.
Geraldo?
Getting back to the initial question of does Jed Gerdes have a financial conflict of interest being on this board and actually suing the board for those?
If you look at the application form, I think he alludes to it there.
I believe when he spoke to the board, he enumerated an amount of money he had paid with other members of the district.
I think he believes that the board or the district owns him a couple thousand dollars, I think. Something like there was some pipe to replace that cost $7,600, and the district paid off only $1,200 of it. The remaining amount was to divide by three groups of landlords, and he was one of them, so roughly $2,000. I do believe he believes he has that money coming. But again, I'm reiterating what I've got from him.
All right, Alan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we should give him a try, see what he can do. I'm concerned the way he answered question two. If you read question two and how he answered it, it sounds very personal. He was asked, what's your knowledge of the appointed board's operations, property holdings, staff taxes and fees, and he personalized it. And, of course, his comment about Pius being making an unbiased decision, you know, I take umbrage of that. I think Pius does a good job. But that being said, I think we ought to give him a chance. There's two other board members, and let's see how he does. And if something happens that comes out down the road, then there are six other members you could try and cajole and to be on the board. But it's tough. I mean, find one of six people to come on this board. So he's willing to do it. Let's try it.
All right, Jan.
Had brief conversation with him at our last meeting. My understanding was that he listed some of this, at least that's what he said to me, to indicate that he felt that work that was needed was not being done by the current board, and that's why those landholders that needed that, I think it was a culvert, as I remember, that had been damaged, that it needed to be repaired, and that board wasn't doing it, and they were affected, so they stepped in and paid for it. And he kind of indicated that he wanted to serve because he felt that they weren't doing their job, and he would like to do the job. Mr. McMahon farms in the area, but he does not live in the drainage district. He's a tenant farmer in that drainage district. So I intend to support Mr. Gervis and give him a chance to see if he can help do the job.
All right, Stan.
I was going to let Jan follow up on that. I sort of feel that way, too. He had a vested interest in the land out there. He does seem to know a lot about it. I don't always agree with everybody, but in life, that's how it goes, and we need to look at it and say, you know, what's best for what's out there instead of personalizing it, I guess. And I'm grateful for anybody that will step up and say they're willing to serve on a board that pays nothing and put their time and effort into it.
All right. Astrid?
The way I understand this situation is they were replacing the road and the culvert under it that got the drainage from his side to the side of the other board members had given out and had to be replaced. It's been said, why did he pay for it? They wouldn't stop the road and wait a year or two. He had to pay for it. And they said, yes, this is our project. They signed on for it. And then they wouldn't pay for it because they're on the other side of the road and didn't want to assess themselves. So, you know, I think the people, the board members, have behaved much worse than the landowners on the other side. So I think it's a really sad point.
All right, Aaron.
Well, I guess I just say that I would disagree that he himself would have had to pay for it. The project was done before he paid for it, and I don't see the state coming back in and taking that tile out. The state should have then, if they weren't going to get their money, go after the district as a whole. That's not to say that I'm not going to support his appointment to this board. Hearing from Mr. Mosier and stuff, I do know Jed just a little bit, have done some electrical work for him, but that's beside the point. I'm not going to say there's not going to be some conflicts, but he is willing to serve on the board. I think maybe, yeah, like Al Nuda said, give him a chance.
All right, Tom?
I think I'm going to be the token person who cannot support this nomination. And I've always supported consistently the chair's nominations, but I think there is a huge white elephant here. There is a conflict. It may not be the one that the state's attorney has apparently absolved him of, but there's a chosen action here, and that is that this individual can sit on the board and potentially sue that board. That board can hire an attorney. He can hire an attorney, and the two attorneys actually can both potentially bill that same district. I have a problem with that. I would be much more comfortable if the issue with regard to the payment on this claim had been resolved before he was appointed to the board. It has nothing to do with him individually. I don't like stuff like that. Sitting out there when you're on such a small board in a small district, I think it actually has the potential to create further acrimony. He's going to be appointed, but I can't support it.
All right, are we ready to vote? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign.
Aye.
It passes. All right, our next item on the agenda, A2, is the appointment to county board members to the EMA Director Search Committee.
This is for again hiring a replacement for Mr. William Keller, who plans to retire in the next few months. And per county board rules, the committee includes the county administrator, the county board chair, one Republican board member, one Democratic board member, appointed by and the board chair, and three other members to be appointed by the county administrator. Therefore, I nominate Mr. Richards as a Democrat and Mr. Jay as the Republican.
Second.
I have a second by Brendan. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Same sign. Motion passes unanimously.
The vacant positions listing is in your packet for your information, and I would just remind you all that the general 2011 annual employee recognition event is Monday, October 31st from 11:30 to 1:30 at the Urbana Civic Center, and we hope that many of you are able to attend and participate in that event. County board members and department heads will present to the individuals who are being recognized. There will be a lunch. We are also collecting from department heads and anyone else who's interested in donating gifts to be raffled during the event. So if you wanted to participate in that, let us know. I think we will make sure that we have a final sign-up sheet for you to circulate at the October 20th County Board meeting to make sure we know which of you will be able to attend. So please be prepared to document that evening if you will be able to attend, as we'll build the program based on who's going to be there.
Thank you. All right. Next item is item C, County Clerk's report on monthly fees. Moved by Mr. Betts. Seconded by Aaron Esri. Any discussion about the report? All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Motion passes. We have under item D, we have recommendations for review of closed session minutes. Pius?
Yes, in your handout you should have, I guess, what color is this? Salmon-colored piece of paper. And I'll point out a couple of changes. Well, first off, number one, we should call that labor negotiations, not union negotiations, because not everybody's a member of the union. What I did is I took advice, some notes that people give to me, and either I change it or I put it in brackets. So brackets, like let's say for number four, open after 10, unless still employed. Somebody else suggested 5 years instead of 10. I also combined health insurance salary schedules as part of all being labor negotiations. Really, they're all part of that. And one other thing I did is before I had land transactions, purchasing, selling, and leases all together, they're really two different items, because if you purchase, if we buy a property or sell property, you know, it's sort of like we do it and it's over with. With a lease, you have an ongoing relationship, so they're fundamentally different. So I think those are two different categories. And per recommendation of Mr. Noodle for purchasing or selling open after 6 months, because that, whatever that amount is, becomes public, you know, sooner or later. So fine, open after 6 months, or whatever that next review period, somebody in the review period would come up. Land, the leases, I figured, well, make that 5 years afterwards, unless the lease is still active. If it's still active, then I'd need to close. But if it's, you're no longer leasing the property, wait 5 years. That way, at least if something comes up, it was a previous county board by a couple terms. And, you know, so like the county board would have changed. So any sort of issues that may be revealed by those notes, I put it at 5 years. And then everything else is really up for your discussion. So hopefully next month we can bring it to the board as an action item.
So are you looking for some more input at this time?
Yeah.
All right, Tom?
I guess I have two primary concerns in terms of personnel matters and labor negotiations. I have sat on the labor negotiation committee for over almost a decade. I think that the people who are on that committee representing management should be able to talk very freely, very honestly, discuss strategies, discuss things that may seem even a little off the wall sometimes, but they need to be able to discuss that. And they need to be able to develop strategy. If you open up after 10 years or 5 years, if I were on the other side as negotiating on behalf of employees, I would want every single one of those closed minutes as soon as I possibly could, because the one thing you will discover is strategy. And there is a strategic process that goes into negotiations. And it comes about by experience, consensus, and depending on what unit you're dealing with. And it varies to some degree who is on the labor committee, but not radically. I really think that labor negotiations, those matters really should not be opened up unless we have a really specific reason to open them up, because they are going to contain strategic analysis that can be used by the folks on the other side. We, you know, obviously we don't ever get to see what their process is, so it puts us at a disadvantage, so I would not favor that. In terms of personnel matters, discipline, performance, termination concerning individual employees remaining closed till death or 10 years after death or forever. Forever is a long, long time, as the song goes. 10 years after death, I don't know whether you need that, but I do think that there are situations in which, one, employees are going to negotiate terminations in which the agreement is that it not be disclosed. And that's going to be probably done in a closed session where you're doing that kind of negotiating, that they don't want a bad review for their next employer. There are also strategic issues that get compromised by that process of performance and termination. You know, you may not have all of the information, but you come to a compromise agreement. You don't want all that information out there for people to say, well, this is how I can deal with the county in my matter. I now know what their strategy is with regard to this. So I think we need to be very, very careful on items number one and number two. On item one, I think we would have to, if we were going to open any of those, I think that we'd have to have a very specific, solid legal reason to do it before I'd be willing to have a policy that just permitted it based on years.
All right, Ralph?
I'm a user of archives, and I object to never or forever. We have no way of predicting under what circumstances these matters may be of interest to historians long down the line. Some of the people that are involved are quite minor at the moment, but they may become important later on. So there, if you want to set it for a century, that's what Mark Twain did with his autobiography. I'm just reading his autobiography now, and there's some good stuff in it, which would have been very incendiary at the time he wrote it or said it, which have now sort of throws light on how we got where we are. So you have no way of predicting that. So none of this stuff, in my opinion, should be immured forever. It can't be immured forever if it's preserved. None of it should be destroyed, because we cannot predict the interest that's likely to arise in it down the line. Legitimate interest.
All right. Pius?
So, Ralph, can you make it, are you suggesting instead of never, 100 years?
If you want to put 100 years in there, fine. That satisfies the
Any further guidance for Pius in this? Patsy?
I think Mr. Batscore's argument, however, I do have a little trouble with him, because it's hard for me to believe that the strategies used in labor negotiations in year 2000 would necessarily be exactly the same for 2010. Things change far too much for that to be happening, and never opening them just is too long. Even 100 years, Ralph, seems too long. The other thing that troubles me is that there is a point of protecting people and personnel matters, but then we find all too often when this begins to happen and they're employed by other places down the line that those problems demonstrate themselves. So I would hope we could come to some point of a middle of the road, honoring the fact that personnel matters do need to have some privacy, but not for long periods of time, because that doesn't seem productive to next-time employers.
All right, Michael.
I want to follow up on what Patsy's saying and say I hope that we go for the most transparency possible, because I think that generally leads to more accountability. And if anything, if we have a bias for anything, it's secrecy and not getting things out in the light too much. So I certainly hope on these things that we're looking at keeping the time period towards the shorter end instead of towards the longer end of these recommendations.
All right, Alan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think regarding personnel matters, you are very limited as to what you can pass on to another employer. And so I think you had better be careful about that particular statement. You cannot give any much information, and a personnel person needs to clarify that, what I just said. But I know from our business standpoint in private enterprise, we are not allowed to bring up anything from a disciplinary area. The questions, were they employed? You can answer affirmatively and negatively. If somebody asks you the question, would you rehire? You can't even answer that. So I think where Pius is on this particular one is very close to where it should be. I don't know if it's 100 years or upon death or 10 years after death, but it certainly isn't, for transparency's sake, doing it at 5 years when somebody asks a personnel director, would you rehire? I mean, let's be careful with some of these statements.
All right. Pius, do you have what you need for now?
All right, modify the next one.
Okay. All right, moving right along then. Next thing on the agenda is D2, which is information on when you can go trick-or-treating, because although there is a time limit, there is not an age limit. We don't have to take any action on this. This is already agreed upon. All right, that's it from policy.
James is going to go as a Democrat.
That's right.
Is that the list of items?
Stacy, James.
Okay, okay. All right, we've got a couple more items to do. Thank you, Mr. Quisenberry. First of all, I'll seek a motion to approve the closed session minutes for the County Administrative Evaluation Committee meeting of September 14, 2011. Moved by Ms. Holderfield.
Second
by Mr. James. Discussion? See none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. We also have a semi-annual review of closed session minutes for these three areas that we are on the agenda tonight. On your desk, you should have a memo from Mr. David DeThorne addressing the minutes that he suggests that we open tonight, and of course that means that we, all the others remain closed. All of you should have had a opportunity to review those minutes. They were in the envelope that were passed around. Therefore, is a motion to open up the minutes. We'll need a motion by the dates that are listed there. I think they're all listed on there. All right, let me ask for it as I find my memo. Thank you. I'll ask for that the minutes of May 21st, 2003, May 18th, 1991, November 16th, 1992, these are in finance, the minutes of a meeting of May 4th and June 24th, 1993 for policy, and also policy January 13th, June 12th, and August 21st, 2000, and for justice, November 17th, 1993, December 5th, 1990, May 1st, 1991, and November 17th, 1992, all under justice. I'd like a motion to open those minutes and have all the others remain closed. Moved by Mr. James. Second by Ms. Anderson. Discussion.
Seeing none, all Mr. Betts.
I think I'm going to have to abstain from the November 17th, 1992 one because I was involved in that litigation.
Okay, well, then Mr. Betts will be not voting. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Those minutes are now open. And one final point. All of you have the MLK nomination forms, hard copies? Oh, they don't. Oh, well, yeah, we have them. We do. But we do have them. Nominations are due November 10th. Please nominate somebody if you think they're worth it. Thank you. We are now adjourned.
All right.